Get in if you call right now, but the lines are ringing for Terry Savage, 312-981-7200. You can text your questions and comments, too. Best if you call. It's a talk show, and we get to the calls sometimes better than the text messages. 312-981-7200 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's your producer, and Terry Savage. TerrySavage.com joins us. Hi, Terry. Welcome back.
Good to be with you. Interesting. Interesting times.
Gee, why would you say that, Tara? What's on your mind?
You know, it's interesting. Yesterday I moderated something I do every year in person, only this was virtual, for the Naperville Area Chamber of Commerce. It's an economic outlook lunch. I usually keep track of what the participants said the year before.
Yeah.
And I said, wait a minute, I'm tearing up all my notes because none of you got it right, except, look, here we are. We're back where we were in the market a year ago. And what could have happened in between if you slept through it?
Yeah, you missed
a lot, but otherwise... The focus was on the forecast going ahead. And I'm still in a good mood from that because Gus Faucher, who's the chief economist at PNC, was so optimistic about when we get the virus, how quickly the economy will pick up and how strong it's been, relatively speaking, recently anyway, and what the vaccine will do. And John Kalamos, the great investment guru, being very optimistic about the markets, and Caroline Harris from the Chamber of Commerce chipping in with the fact that in Washington, where she runs around and is very influential, there's some of the fear of major changes in tax policy has gone away. So it was a pretty rosy picture until I said, but wait a minute, we have about 4 or 5 months to live through not only because of the COVID spike, but live through because unemployment's running out for many people and the moratoriums on rent evictions and foreclosures will be running out. And the tough part is handicapping this next 4 months, mm-hmm. whether any stimulus will be done before the end of the year, whether they'll extend some protections on evictions and mortgage foreclosures. So I'm choosing to be very happy and look beyond the valley, but I know there are a lot of our listeners that are going, wait, how am I going to make it for 4 more months?
Right. You got to get it over that valley. I'm looking at what Mitch McConnell said yesterday. I don't think the current situation demands a multi-trillion dollar package. I think it should be highly targeted, very similar to what I put on the floor in October and September. It's a Newsweek story headline, "Don't Hold Your Breath for Another Stimulus Package in the Coming Months." And Nancy Pelosi's quoted later in the story. Of course, the exact opposite side. She says, we don't want these little packages. We want the whole boat. So they are there divided. And it doesn't
maybe
look like...
Maybe this would be a moment for compromise, do you think? Maybe, just maybe. We used to have compromise. Remember Tip O'Neill? I mean, I'm talking back in the Reagan era. There were compromises. People were divided then. So maybe we could find a compromise.
Stocks have moved up midday. The NASDAQ's up 200-plus points. S&P's up almost 30. Dow's up, I think, 100 and a half or so. I'll get the number here in a second. But anything you want to say about the markets generally right now?
Yeah, you know, I learned a long time ago that I'm not a trader. Everybody's busy talking about the rotation from the stay-at-home stocks to the go-out and be entertained stocks, from the value stock, from the growth stocks, which were growing terrifically because of Amazon and so forth, to the value stocks that were left behind. I just believe in being diversified. I did my time on the floor, and I learned that I'm a much better long-term investor than a trader. I think most of the people that will stop and listen to me really should feel that in themselves as well, and that you set yourself up for the appropriate amount of exposure to the stock market, given the amount of your assets, given your need for money, your time horizon, your own emotions, and then you make that decision and ride it out. So I'm very rarely, I can tell you what people are thinking, but I'm just thinking, you never got rich betting against America. It's the opening line in all my speeches, and I feel pretty happy about sticking with that now.
312-981-7201. No, actually, no phone lines are open. So we'll start to clear them here after we take just a quick check of some other numbers for you. I will note, though, you could almost play a game. And it's that rotation you were talking about. So if I gave you the name of the company, you would be able to say based on the promise of a vaccine whether it went up or down. For instance,
that would be a 20 questions game, yeah.
It would be, if I said Lyft, you would say, okay, what's going to happen? People are going to be more willing to...
Oh, the stock's been up. I mean, they're going to deliver food.
And you can understand why. And
yeah,
and
people are going to get in the cars.
Da-da-da-da-da. And it goes on like that. If in the long run that lifts more ships, then hooray. So,
oh, anything that helps the economy grow, hooray, and that'll move the entire market up. Let me say one thing because I know you're going to break in a minute. This is we are about to hit the opening day of something I talk about every year and nobody calls you about or tells you about. It is the small business special enrollment period for health insurance. And after the break, I'll give you the details. But if you and your spouse are a small business, if you have a partnership, if you have only a couple of employees and maybe one or two of them don't need it because they get union insurance or because they get their spouse's insurance, but you need insurance, this is the one moment, and I'll give you the details after the break, when you can sign up for the best, broadest health insurance policy sold in your state, and nobody's calling you because you're a pain in the neck. You're only one or two or four or five people, and the insurance companies aren't reaching out because you're a pain in the neck to them. But I will tell you where to call and how to set this up, and you've only got a month to do it.
Let's pick up some phone lines. We'll start with John on line one. John, you're on WGN. Go ahead.
Yes, Ms. Darien. Mr. John, I have a question. Which is better, the trust or write a will?
I'm going to give you an easy answer. And that column is also up at terrysavage.com. Here's the answer. A will, everybody knows what it is. I, John Smith, leave my this to so-and-so and my car to my grandson and whatever it is. If you have your house in joint name with your spouse, for example, or with someone else, that goes the outside of your will automatically to the person you designate. If you have life insurance, it goes automatically to the beneficiary. And if you have an IRA, you've named a beneficiary, I hope, and that goes automatically to that person. So for a lot of people, a simple will is just fine. But here's what a revocable living trust does, and it costs about the same as a will, and it gives you some advantages. You can say, suppose you're single, or I'm the John Smith Revocable Living Trust, or if you were married, the John and Mary Smith Revocable Living Trust. You each are the trustees while you're alive, and you designate a successor trustee after you as a single person die or both you and your spouse die, and then it proceeds like a will. But while you're alive, you grant your other co-trustee or the successor trustee the power to act in your behalf in case you cannot act. So if you had a stroke, I remember my grandfather so many years ago, he could only move two fingers and he was trying to say something. Your successor trustee doesn't have to go to court and say, he's had a stroke, he can't communicate, I need to sell our house, I need to get to this account and so forth, because that's all taken care of by creating a revocable living trust.
Wow.
But you must, by the way, change title to all those accounts into the name of your trust. So if you owned your house alone, John Smith, you'll now go to your mortgage company or to the title company and say, now it's going to be in the John Smith Revocable Living Trust. Same thing with your investment accounts or bank accounts, not your IRAs. They have beneficiaries. You know it sounds complicated, but a lawyer will do you this, an estate planning lawyer will do this for you. It's really simple and easy to do. Doesn't change your tax basis. You could still sell your house. You could still sell stocks in your personal account. A revocable living trust is really far superior in many ways.
Great information. John, I hope that helps. Terry, thank you for that. Here's another text for you, Terry. I'm an independent contractor dog walker. Could I hire my boyfriend and form an LLC so we could both get health insurance?
Yeah. Call Alan Wishner. I'm going to give you his number again. He's a very creative guy. The insurance companies, I'm sure you're going to get caught for Blue Cross Blue Shield, but the fact of the matter is, the insurance companies ask for things like your operating agreement or if you're incorporated, your articles of incorporation. They want to see a wage and tax statement. So I don't know how creative you can be for this year, but it's worth giving Alan Wishner a call at VESTA, V-E-S-T-A Benefits Group, and the number is 773-729-2910. If you and I had talked in July, I would have said hire him. pay him a salary, file a quarterly tax statement that, you know, you have an employee. And then for sure, just because you're only walking dogs, that's a very valuable service.
I bet it is.
You could have insurance under this.
John, for Miss Savage, my 88-year-old father's closing on his home for $100,000 net. He's in assisted living, and long-term care insurance is covering his costs. Where should we put his money?
In the bank, in a money market deposit account, earning about 0.25%, and nowhere else. But you should put that account either in joint name with you, so that if he's incapacitated, you can write checks perhaps for his care. He's not going on Medicaid because he has this asset, so that's not as it, I mean, you can only have $2,500 in assets to qualify for a state-funded nursing home. But these days, that's absolutely not where you want to be, and I've been saying that for 25 years.
I heard you say
with
it.
All due respect to the people who work there. So that money, though, should be left in the bank. He won't have any taxes to pay because he gets $150,000 worth of capital gains, $250,000 that he doesn't have to pay taxes on. So there's no taxes. Put it away safely. Put it in a way, not just in his name, joint name with you maybe, so you can write checks if needed.
Terry, short answer to this one. I received two U.S. bank debit cards in the mail. I did not apply for a debit card, let alone two. I did not apply for unemployment. There's no phone number to call. What do I do?
Okay, go immediately to terrysavage.com. Look for a box that says identity theft, do this. It's on the right-hand side of my website. Scroll down a little bit. It will give you how to check your credit report. I want you to contact the U.S. bank numbers on the back of the card, but don't enable the card. It shows you how to report if you think it's related to unemployment to the state and the FBI, and to freeze your credit, and then contact any inquiries that were made by other banks where they might have siphoned off money from your unemployment. So you asked me to be short. Go to terrysavage.com. Identity theft, do this, because you, sir, are a victim of identity theft.
Barbara, you're on WGN.
Terry, I've been waiting 3 days to hear from you somewhere. God bless you. For an insurance payment receipt, is there any problem just putting that in without any retribution, just putting it into a checking account, or is there like a penalty if it's over $10,000?
What kind of an insurance? Did you get paid out from an accident or something?
No, death benefit payout to me.
Oh, so someone left you an insurance policy. You're the beneficiary of an insurance policy.
Yes, ma'am.
It's all yours. It doesn't impact much. If you're on Medicaid, for example, you want to be careful because you can only have $2,500 in assets. But you don't pay taxes as a beneficiary of a life insurance policy. You can do what you want with it. Be very careful what you do with it because this is truly a one-time deal.
Oh, God bless you for your time. I just got done writing two numbers down you already gave. Vesta, I need that, and I needed that Will's information. Thank you so much.
We'll repeat.
Oh, good. Thank
you. Hey, I'm so glad to hear that. Okay, and I'll repeat that phone number and website with Terry after the news. The news is next. Terry Savage gave out a number a while ago, and here it is again, 773-729-2910. 773-729-2910. Did I get that right, Terry?
You did. That's for Vesta Benefits Group if you want small business health insurance.
Vesta Benefits. Okay, Terry, lots more calls. You ready to take more?
I'm ready to go.
TerrySavage.com is her website. She joins us on Wednesdays at this time. Let's talk to Phil. How can we help you, Phil? You're on WGN.
Yeah, Terry, I need some information on a BIG, the big grants out of the state of Illinois.
I don't know anything about the BIG grants, but I'll be happy to research it for you if you'll post on my website.
What's the matter? What do you need, Phil?
Well, I got an email from somebody at the state. I'm in specialized ag, and basically the terms of the email were it's a business interruption grant, and the governor is very upset that specialized ag isn't being supported, and they're basically telling me, please apply immediately.
You know what? I'm going to look into that. That's a very interesting story. I bet Orion, and we should ask Orion next time he breaks in for stock market. He'd be the one that would have that on the tip of his tongue.
Okay, but TerrySavage.com, too. Terry's pretty good about reading her email and responding to her email. We hear that every week.
Okay.
Good luck, Phil. And Karen, you're on WGN. Karen, what can we do for you?
Hi, I'm actually retired. I did get a job through an agency from January through March, and I did collect unemployment after that until September 14th. I got a job a new job on September 28th. I worked 27 days, which was 6 weeks. So on November 6th, the school closed due to COVID. The agency offered me another job, which I went to yesterday, but I decided not to go to that one because they were not following any of the
COVID guidelines, ideas.
Yeah, and I was afraid that I would get sick. And plus there were 133 children out, plus 19 adults, and that's why they were going to agencies.
I'm glad you didn't go.
Hey, hold on a second. Hold on a second. I know what you're going to. Hold on. Wait, Karen.
I don't know if I can go to.
Karen, hold on a second. Was that a Chicago public school? What city was that school in?
It's LaGrange. And the LaGrange Highlands.
Okay, here's what you can do. You can apply now to reopen your claim.
So do I call on that to reopen? Because I just closed it. I just told them I got a job. I was so excited. I did.
That's good for you, and you did the right thing.
Cool.
Here's my two suggestions.
Right.
So stay calm. Number one, there's a great need for people who can teach. I assume you're teaching or doing something in the school. And you're willing to do it, obviously, in a safe school. So I suggest you go back to the agency, the staffing agency that you're using. Give it a week here and see if you can find another place where you really get a salary. Because the unemployment benefits are low now. You're not missing out on all, you're missing out on money, but it's not the $600 a week or even the $300 additional a week. So I would just stay calm, go back to the agency, explain why you felt you were unable to take that, see if they have another location for you. That might solve your problem. If not, it's going to be complex. It's going to take forever, but you can go back and file to reopen that claim.
Okay.
Well, and you can document that you tried to go to two places or whatever it was and that you haven't been able to be employed there.
Good luck on that. By the way, so does a person have a recourse? Can they claim unemployment benefits because they had a job but they didn't feel it was safe? So essentially they've quit that job.
You know, this has been a huge issue that I've dealt with dozens of times in the emails I've received. The state has an exemption, a health exemption for people who are compromised in some way or another. It has exemptions if you're the sole support of a minor child and that you're needed to be at home for health reasons. But, you know, trying to deal with the state of Illinois on this is just almost impossible. So it's a matter of luck. I think you try and apply and then you have to certify and you can't go, that you can't go to a place like this because of your age and your vulnerability and so forth. So it's a dart toss, I think, on whether you get benefits. There's no rational person behind it.
It should be more than that, Terry. I mean, anybody with lungs right now should reasonably feel unsafe at a school that has 130 kids out and 19 adults.
Yeah, without question. There's no doubt about that, and it says so in the written law. It's just that you so often can't get through at all. I mean, you know, I put my phone number in for a callback a few weeks ago. I said just because I wanted to see it. Never occurred to me to do that. I did have a question I wanted to ask on behalf of someone who. So I figured, okay, I'll just put my number in for a callback. That's 3 weeks ago. I'm still waiting. So, you know, just as an average citizen. So I'm not terribly sure that logic or even the law is what the practical implications
right,
of the decision
right, that's almost
are.
Beside the point.
Yeah.
Terry, my mother-in-law passed away. Her house is worth around $300,000. We want to sell it. My wife is the only one on the will. How much can we keep? And if we want to give money to my kids, how much can we give them without being taxed?
I have great news for you. Your mother-in-law left the house in the will to your spouse. You inherit that with no taxes due, even if she bought it for $12,000 back in 1948, okay? When you sell it, if you decide to sell it immediately, your cost basis on that asset is the value as of the date of death. So basically, if you sell within a couple of months of her death, there will be no taxes owed on the sale of the property in terms of gains. Then let's say you get that $300,000 and you put it in the bank and you have three kids and you don't need it and you give them each $100,000, there is no tax to you or to them on that gift. Basically, in your lifetime, under current law, you can give away a little over $11 million each of you, or she can give away $11.2 million. So there is no tax consequence.
Another good piece of information there. I'm happy, 815, that you texted in. We'll take one more phone call, and that'll be you, Mike. You're on WGN. How can we help you, Mike?
Oh, boy. Thanks, John and Terry, for doing this for us. You know, back in September, Terry, the governor announced Illinois Department housing grants for renters and mortgage holders.
Yes.
We applied, a lot of us in the neighborhood applied. We're all struggling. We're all furloughed. For the mortgage assistance, made it by literally that 9 a.m. Monday morning, we were all on, did our thing. We got the email, success, your documents have been submitted. They said 3 to 4 weeks. We've been waiting now. Now their website has a little blurb on there basically saying, don't bother calling. We can't give you any information over the phone. You just have to wait. And now we're going into November, and we don't even know if we did get it or if we're not. And, you know, I keep calling the bank to extend our mortgage grace period,
yeah.
You know, and they've been great, you know, but now we don't know. We're stuck with the governor's office and Illinois Department of Housing. How do we even know if we're being considered?
That's the kind of project I like to take on. I put it up on my website. I followed up to some extent when they announced they were making the renter's grants. I haven't seen what happened with the mortgage grants. Let me do my very best, and next Wednesday we come back, and even if you don't come back and get on to ask a question, I promise to follow up. Okay?
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it sounded like a great grant. They were willing to pay out up to $15,000, which we didn't even need half of that because we've been able, with unemployment, to cover our mortgage, but now, you know, we're not expected to go back to work. We're trying to find part-time jobs. And, you know, this would be a godsend to a lot of us out here in the neighborhood. And we're just all a little frustrated.
And then they pull the rug out. And then they disappear. They ghost you. The state of Illinois ghosts you. And now you're just sitting there wondering if you even did it right. So I'm looking at Pete Zimmerman. And, Terry, I know you'll pay attention to this, too. Let's play back 10 seconds of this call next Wednesday as a reminder. And we'll see what we can find out in the interim. Good luck.
I'll go to work on it. They've talked about distributing money under the rental program, but I have not seen anything about the mortgage program. I will go to work on this for you. Thank you.
TerrySavage.com. What a delight, Terry. We'll visit with you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Time for the, it's 1244. Let's get you more business news. Back into the WGN Radio newsroom. Here is Steve Grzanich.
New research by Northwestern and Stanford has determined the places you're most likely to catch or spread COVID-19. And those locations are where people congregate for long periods of time in relatively crowded spaces. The research in the journal Nature reports 80% of infections come from just 10% of locations. And the worst offenders are restaurants, hotels, places of worship, and health clubs. They don't recommend closing those places, just cutting capacity. The pandemic has hit a number of Chicago institutions very hard, and we're seeing today just how hard it's hit the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. CSO's declared a $4.4 million operating deficit compared to $1.1 million last year. The deficit is the highest the organization has seen since 2002, when the recorded deficit was $6.1 million. Grubhub is teaming up with the Greg Hill Foundation's Restaurant Strong Fund to offer financial support to independent restaurants. Chicago Inno says the Restaurant Winterization Grant will provide $10,000 grants to help restaurants prepare for winter by helping them address needs for additional infrastructure and equipment to extend outdoor dining, increase personal protective equipment, and other necessities to get them through the cold weather months. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Speaking of your family's home and staying healthy, here is Erica Lacroix. She is the president of Easy Breathe. This is a company that's helping homes and businesses ventilate more safely during the pandemic. Erica, you're on WGN. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I said residential and business. Did I get that right? What community do you serve?
We do serve both, so yes, you got it correct.
And is it a filter I put on my furnace, or is it a whole new system that the air will circulate through?
You know, it's a whole separate system that does not require any existing furnace or, you know, some people have radiant floor heat,
right.
Some people have electric baseboards. So it does not require anything be in the home specifically other than, you know, an outside wall because we do have a vent that vents the air to the outside, much like a dryer vent would. So it's a freestanding system that gets mounted against an exterior wall of the structure, and it provides air exchange and improves indoor air quality by simply providing a path of escape for all of the toxins and, you know, airborne contaminants that, quite frankly, they get stuck in our home and make us sick.
How can I ensure that the air finds that vent? How do you get it from one room in one part of the house to the exit point?
Well, we have a, there's a fan at the base of our system that slowly draws the air down into our system. So it's generally installed at the lowest level of the structure. And the air, over time, we create complete home air exchanges anywhere between 6 to 10 times a day based on the square footage of the structure.
Am I sending my warm air out in the winter? I mean, so you're capturing these particles or are you just spewing them out into the backyard?
We are ventilating the home, so we're not capturing anything. We're not recirculating. That's the big news. We're not recirculating the same stagnant air, trying to modify the air in any way. That's a very expensive endeavor. It uses a lot of energy. So through just ventilation, so yes, we're exhausting the air, but because we do it in the lowest level, we also have a monitor on the device that senses dry, warm air, so the unit will cycle off when it senses that. And when the dirty, damp air is registered by the onboard humidistat, the unit will cycle back on. So we do protect you from exhausting your heat, you know, straight out to the outside. Now, that being said, most homes lose between 40 to 60% of our heat through the natural stack effect. So we're losing a lot of heat through the roof and the windows and the walls, you know, because as heat rises, it gets evacuated out through the walls and windows. So Easy Breathe has a resistance to that. So we find that when folks have an Easy Breathe in their home, their energy costs actually go down because we're able to support a more efficient process through the existing systems. The air is cleaner. It doesn't tax the system so much that it takes as long to heat or as long to cool, and their filters don't get dirty as they once did.
Yeah.
So we work in conjunction with whatever system you have in your home.
Erica is the president of Easy Breathe. That's E-Z-B-R-E-A-T-H-E, Easy Breathe. So how is that priced? Square footage or something like that? I mean, how do you get one of these things?
Yeah, we have various models based on the specifics of the home. So square footage, the type of home, is it built on a basement? Is it built on a crawl space? Is it built on a slab? So there's a few different models. But, you know, the operational cost is very, very energy efficient. Most folks like to liken it to like a dehumidifier that they run in their basement that, you know, can sometimes cost, you know, $50, $100 a month in electricity. Our unit is much, much more cost effective. We're only $2 to $4 per month on the electric bill. So a much more cost effective and efficient solution to improving the indoor air quality.
Can you ballpark me the cost of one of these units for a 2,000 square foot home?
Built on a basement or a crawl space, because our systems are different. They can range anywhere from maybe $1,100 up to $2,200 based on the specifics of the home.
I think I'm pleased for you to hear that. That does not sound unapproachable. I think if you've got a home and you want to be safe and there's an energy advantage, then that sounds like a good price point.
Yes, yes. Our homeowners think so, too. And it does come with a 10-year warranty, which is something that, you know, when it comes to home appliances, we feel that we're some of the best in the business.
Erica, nice to talk to you. It's easybreathe.com. Is that the website?
It is, yes. Thank you. Easybreathe.com, and that's B-R-E-A-T-H-E.
Erica Lacroix is the president. Thanks for joining us.